Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week.
So I should start by saying we're recording on a new computer here because my computer just up and died.
So if we sound a little bit weird,
a little echoey perhaps, it's a new computer and we'll see what we can deal with in future weeks. But for now, if we're echoey, just pretend you're listening to us in a tunnel.
I like to think we're recording in like
actually, if they were listening to us in a tunnel. Yeah, I guess we would still. It would still echo.
That's how we're listening. I mean, if we were there live yelling at them in a tunnel about these comic books.
I was thinking it would be cooler if they imagined us recording in a cave.
Or you can do that too.
Can we be in the Bat Cave?
Yes, we can be in the Bat Cave.
Yeah. We're coming at you live from the Bat Cave here.
or I'm going to delete all that. We'll just start with that.
Yeah, even as we speak, Alfred has brought me sandwiches with the crust cut off.
I'm going to go play with the giant penny.
He's a sweet guy.
Alfred has brought me Lobster Thermidor because that's his thing from Lego Batman movie. All right. Got some store news this time out because we're hitting a new month. So the clearance sale is about to wrap up. We got about 1 or 2 weeks left. We are at the sort of penultimate discount of 65% plus 2D6. So 67% off. It's almost as good as it's going to get.
Yep. I've seen some people making some excellent rolls and like walking away with stuff for a steal.
Yep. And there's still some good stuff. So come in and check that out in the next couple weeks before that ends. I should announce, I don't know if I mentioned this, but we are actually not going to close for inventory this year. We've got something worked out, so we will not be closed on the Monday the 13th as originally planned, which we're all very happy
about.
So
you should come out Monday the 13th and buy things?
Buy things. You can do that.
Yeah.
We are coming into March, so we will have a new Reading with Rogues selection. That means that it's 15% off for everyone, 25% off if you have a Rogue card, and our selection for March is Faith Volume 1.
Oh, right, right.
The Valiant Book Faith, so... Yeah. You can check that book out.
Mentioned many a time in this very podcast.
And our gaming selection of the month, which you get 10% off on if you have a Rogue card, is Seven Wonders Duel, the two-player version of the Seven Wonders game. We're going to play that on Saturday, March 18th here in the store. And since it is only a two-player game, and we only have a couple copies on hand, we'll probably try to have more. But we're also going to run regular Seven Wonders that night, so people can try that out.
I think people should circle the players that are doing it and make, you know, blood bets on them, like
chant.
Thunderdome. Yeah,
yes.
Like really make it an event.
Duel.
Yes. Seven Wonders!
I like it. Kind of a Thunderdome kind of thing.
Yeah.
That may happen. Probably won't. We have our Magic pre-release coming up. It's in April, Sunday, April 23rd, but we always like to give a little early warning that that's coming up. And a quick request, if anybody out there has extra red mana cards and wants to swap them out for some booster packs, come talk to us because we would like to make that deal because our
land station that's a little bit woefully inadequate on the red front.
Yes, the mountains have fled. And finally, again, it's early announcement. I don't even have any announcement on what games we're doing, but International Tabletop Day, the celebration of board gaming presented by Geek and Sundry and Tabletop.
It's become a bit of a thing.
It's year 5.
Yep.
And that is on Saturday, April 29th. And we will, as always, be running all kinds of games. Always a ton of fun. Definitely come out for it. All right. On to news, because there's some news this week. So let's start with the thing we just watched, which is there's a trailer for an original movie on Netflix.
Yep.
Yeah.
Has the biggest budget of any Netflix movie at $90 million.
Yes.
It is written by Max Landis.
Yep.
It is directed by
David Ayer,
who you might know as the guy from Suicide Squad and Fury.
Yep.
And it stars Will Smith. It is called Bright.
And it looks like it's some kind of... A near future?
I got a vibe of near future.
Or like alternate future where orcs, elves, and humans...
Well, yeah, I was getting to that. But I was like, it looked before that was introduced, it looked a little apocalyptic or like almost like sort of fascist state-y.
I think it might just be L.A., dude.
Could just be tomorrow.
I felt like I didn't get the apocalyptic vibe.
I didn't either.
I felt it was just...
I think that's just
California.
I think it's just the streets of L.A.
Okay.
But there are orcs and elves on it, which again could just be the streets of L.A.
Right, well, I heard Shadowrun being dropped, and so I assumed that I thought they might be pushing it a little forward in the future.
No, I just Shadowrun because it was like modern day cops with elves and orcs and stuff.
And Shadowrun is magic. Futuristic cops with orcs and elves and stuff, sir.
All right. Well, I didn't say it was a 1-1.
I'm just saying there was an orc with a shotgun, and that's kind of cool.
Yep.
The trailer was not half bad as teaser trailers go.
Yeah, it's only 30 seconds, but I kind of liked it.
Yeah, the creative team behind it is a little bit more disconcerting.
Me too. Yeah,
but I feel like on an original property. I mean, instead maybe, of like,
but like, what else has David Ayer done besides Suicide Squad? Which I did have some enjoyment for. Okay, I haven't seen that. Anything else?
Not that I know of.
Yeah, nothing that jumps to mind. But okay. Fury is definitely. But
let's remember, Max Landis originally did Chronicle, which I think we all liked.
Right.
So yes. I have a certain faith in original properties. I'm not wild about this. I'm not crazy about the creative team, but I'm curious about the
property. There is something kind of cool where, you know, you have this kind of city type landscape and you see Will Smith like drawing what looks like a magical like two-handed sword thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool looking.
I'm also trying to remember the last time I didn't have fun with a Will Smith movie to some extent.
Wild Wild West?
I actually have a fondness for Wild Wild West.
Oh, well, then your opinions are not valid. I'm sorry.
Why? Wild Wild West is a perfectly fun movie.
That is not true.
The Will Smith, I've never seen Wild Wild West, so I can't comment
giant
on that.
Giant robot spider? That's cool.
No, no, it's not.
Wait a minute. If we take off Nick's mask, is it going to be...
It's John Peters.
John Peters underneath?
I knew it. And we got away with it, not for these kids.
That's Kenneth Branagh.
Lots of things have Kenneth Branagh.
Kenneth Branagh is very funny in it.
I mean, I could say Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull that it's got Harrison Ford.
That's right.
No, Wild Wild West is better than Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull.
Okay, that is not a bar. That's not possible. Yeah.
Anyway, I will back up Nick here in the sense that I feel like Will Smith is always watchable in whatever he does.
Yeah.
And like I know that there's like maybe not a lot of love for. What's his I Am Legend? But I liked
I Am Legend.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty fine. Decent. Yeah. And he's a very very watchable.
Enemy of the State. I think fun movie.
I Am Legend. I think the problem it had was the two CGI villains that were not great CGI, and also it's a Richard Matheson story, and it was done very well in the 70s. So I think it was being compared to better things. But I don't think as a standalone, it was bad.
Right. In fact, I would actually say of all of the other adaptations, and there's actually been that's the third adaptation.
Yeah, because there was Omega Man and...
Prior to that, there was Last Man on Earth.
Last Man on Earth, right.
With Vincent Price.
Yeah.
Which is really good.
And they all have their merits. I actually think I might find Will Smith one of the most watchable of them. Because every one of them tweaks the book. I've yet to see one that's really quite faithful to it.
I do think that I Am Legend was missing the same thing Suicide Squad. And for that matter, Ali was missing a Will Smith rap. I feel like he should be required to do a rap for every movie he's in.
There was no rap for Independence Day.
Because, but there should have been. Independence Day needed a rap. Wild Wild West and Men in Black are very catchy songs, and I believe that Will Smith should be contractually required to do a rap for every song.
Rap for every
movie that he's in.
Right. I don't think he's like done any music in the last 10 years, right?
Randy is right though.
You're right.
Maybe he's built. It's just building.
When
up.
You look, Randy, would you say that the rap for Wild Wild West, in some sense, redeems it?
Yes,
like
yes,
makes it worthy to exist upon this earth or to have existed. Before your agents cleansed it of its presence.
The music video, which features some of Wild Wild West, is better than Wild Wild West. And I will also say this.
I've seen that happen before.
I haven't seen the whole movie, just the trailer. But I believe that Legend of Beggar Vance, had it had a rap, would have been a better movie.
It has Matt Damon. I actually like Legend of Beggar Vance.
But don't you think a Will Smith rap would have been pretty good?
It would have been interesting. It would have been a different twist on that.
I'm just saying, Will Smith rap improves everything. all right, moving on. Speaking of directors we're not certain of, Joe Carnahan, who Dave was noting, directs only manly movies.
Right, the most testosterone-soaked.
The Gray, Narc, he wrote and directed A-Team.
He's basically like a version of Michael Mann.
Yeah.
Before we say that, but it's like Michael Mann combined with Michael Bay.
Yes, exactly. There you go. I was going to say he's a little more, because he also did like
Smoke. It's a combination of two Michaels.
Well, Smoke and Aces. Smoke and Aces 2, I'm sorry. But, yeah, he's not in the same rarefied air as Michael Mann.
Liked The Gray.
I liked
The Gray, too.
Liked A-Team. I liked
A-Team. So we don't hate this man.
No. But neither are we like, oh, great, Joe Carnahan's
involved. What's he doing?
He is doing X-Force, and that seems like a perfect fit for him.
Does this mean Liam Neeson is going to be in X-Force?
That would be amazing. Liam Neeson being Cable.
Yeah, sure. I would go for that in a heartbeat.
Oh, that's right. He does have a big relationship with Liam Neeson. He does. The Gray and A-Team.
Yep. Now, what's X-Force? What do we know about this?
We don't know much. We know it's probably... Well, Deadpool 2 is going to have Cable. We're guessing it's going to have Cable. That they'll probably do, like, Domino.
Yeah. And X-Force movie could be fun. Are we assuming Deadpool is in it?
I would bet he would.
Yeah, I would bet.
Well, there are rumors that Ryan Reynolds is co-writing.
Yeah.
There's also...
going to be a little bit like the kind of recent X-Force with kind of its morally gray ambiguity.
Oh, I'm sure.
Was that Remender?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be like the Remender one, though. I think it's going to be more of a classic action-y X-Force.
Well, this is the time we're going to delve into the Phantom X and have all the world. And
that would actually – I could totally see Phantom X being a part of this X-Force. That'd be where they
introduce him. He would make sense to have in there kind of
– I was joking. I can't believe you guys are
agreeing. Oh, no, totally. I think Phantom X will probably be an X-Force.
I think they would probably have fun having a sort of catty, sexually ambiguous, and adventurous Frenchman.
You know, Tom Hardy should play that dude.
Probably that would be fun.
He won't, but he'd be perfect for it. He's too big for it.
I do think, given Carnahan's stuff, well, he's done sort of, I mean, like, the Gray is pretty serious, but A-Team is obviously lightweight.
Yeah, Narc is serious.
Yeah, so I could see him doing either type of story in this.
I don't think you can go too super serious if you include Deadpool. I think you have to be kind of...
But he was like, wasn't he a member in the Remender run?
Yeah, but he was always kind of joking.
Sure. But I mean, that gives the balance when they're not like being like, we killed a kid.
I would expect the tone to be something like A-Team action comedy.
So,
yeah,
that's what, given that Deadpool made $800 billion trillion dollars, quadrillion.
That's correct. I believe last count, it was $800.7 quadrillion.
I think it surpassed most other X-Men movies.
Yeah, like it made more than Scrooge McDuck owns.
Yes. It's actually Ryan Reynolds swims around in a vault full of coins.
Right. And Scrooge McDuck has to serve him breakfast.
That's right. Here's your breakfast.
I'll help you choke on it. So yeah, we should take bets as to what direction that they might go in it. But I think that the sale or the box office results of Deadpool mean probably the lighter fare.
Yeah,
thinking about that.
Also, here's the weird thing: I'm aware that the original X-Force stuff was pretty bad.
Yeah,
I have a weird fondness for X-Force. I like the notion of a proactive mutant and like military strike force.
Are you talking about like the very very earliest one?
All of it. I'm talking about all of it. I don't know that I own any X-Force comics.
Oh, sorry. I was blurring into my head a little bit with X-Factor.
No, X-Force.
Which I did like when it started. X-Force, what did that kick off with?
Juggernaut versus X-Force with Spider-Man guest starring, I believe.
Well, that was the second story arc. The first story arc was just including the team.
Yeah, it had Deadpool in it.
But this was Liefeld from the beginning, right?
Yeah.
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 It was a spinoff of his New Mutants.
They turned Thunderbird into Warpath, somewhat insensitively.
Sure.
But like Cable and Domino, they were doing the mystery of what Cable's powers were and his origins.
And Boom Boom and
Boom Boom and Cannonball,
Forgettable,
Sunspot,
Feral,
who I hated. But
and Shatterstar.
The thing is, a graduate of
X Factor.
Yeah. At any rate, my point is not that I love the particular issues, but that my inner 13-year-old really loves X Force.
Just wants to see them visually realized
and just kind of wants. And I don't care who the team is. Like I don't need. I'm not like a no Feral, no movie kind of guy.
Right.
But just like the idea of X-Force, I'm kind of excited to see on the screen.
Yeah.
That's more or less kind of that side of, oddly enough, of Watchmen was part of what fueled my enjoyment of the movie.
Yep.
Even though the movie was sort of paled in comparison to the comic.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's cool to see Rorschach. Oh, the owl ship looks cool.
You saw that Photoshopped image of Russell Crowe as Cable.
No, but did you see that what happened was Liefeld tweeted out, he's like Russell Crowe, you should read for this part. And Russell Crowe tweeted back, he's like, I should read for it? Which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Like Russell Crowe is like, I got Oscars, dude. I'm not reading for your stupid
part.
That's
kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
I think I've heard that Russell Crowe, he's one of those jerk guys, right? But it is kind of funny to see somebody like Liefeld get shut down.
It's always fun to watch Liefeld get owned.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can root for the jerk in this case.
Yeah, well, either side, you're rooting for the jerk.
That's true. I'll root for the jerk who has a lot of talent.
Okay, so moving on from X-Force to X-Men, the drama that's currently in development at Fox, it's
shaping up.
What's it called?
It's called X-Men Drama. We don't know what it's called yet.
It's untitled.
But it's going to get some name.
Yes.
We just know that it's tied into the X-Men movies, sort of.
No.
Here's my guess. X-Men, the show about mutants, but not those mutants you know, and also forget about Apocalypse. It's not that. That's my title.
And from what I understand, I don't think it's tied into the movies.
So here's what Matt Nix, Burn Notice creator Matt Nix, among other things he's done.
Yeah.
He says, I guess I'd say in a general way, it acknowledges that events like the events that have happened in the movies have happened. You know what I mean? but it's not to date. It's still evolving. We'll see how much that comes in. It's certainly not, since this happened in X-Men Apocalypse, now all of these things are happened, which I think is cool, but they already did that.
So what we might expect is, this is the one, this is basically about a family of mutants or with mutants in it on the run.
Two human parents discover their children as mutants, forcing them to run from a hostile government and join with an underground network of mutants to survive.
Right. So we expect that they might be like, you know, there might be news stories about, you know, a mutant terrorist incident occurred, but they may not be like Apocalypse attack last week.
Right.
Right.
They'll be more generalized.
Here's the thing. I'm looking forward to it because Matt Nix runs good shows. He also did The Good Guys. He's done a lot of good shows.
It's not going to be like X-Men technically is like a weirdly a period piece at the moment, set in like the 70s or 80s or whatever.
I don't know.
So this one is presumably going to be present times, which makes it probably even more incumbent on them to somewhat remove it from the movie.
Well, we also don't know, like, it's just a pilot. We know there hasn't been a series order yet. We don't know. But what's interesting is they've done some casting. Gotham alum Jamie Chung has been cast as Blink, which is a pretty notable character.
Yeah.
Who's Jamie Chung? Who was she on Gotham?
I don't know. She was on Gotham. I don't watch Gotham.
I've seen the first two seasons. I'm just trying to...
Let me IMDb that for you.
Okay.
Because I don't know.
I mean, if she's in season three, then I don't know who.
Have you seen both seasons one and two?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. She was Valerie Vale.
Oh, she was the... Okay. Vicky Vale.
She also played...
I think that's season three.
She also played Mulan in Once Upon a Time. And she voiced Go-Go in Big Hero 6.
Okay.
She also played Miho in Sin City, A Game to Kill For.
Ah, there you go.
She's genre as hell.
Yeah, she is. So she is going to be Blink, which is kind of cool.
Okay.
And then they've cast Blair Redford, who is in Switched at Birth. Nick, anything?
I don't remember Switched at Birth.
I've never heard of it. He is playing a Native American mutant leader. They haven't said who that is, but that's got to be Thunderbird, who they hopefully will not call Warpath.
Right. We were thinking if they just went with his name, James Proudstar.
Yeah.
That then just called him like Proudstar or something like that. That'd be kind of cool.
But that's kind of cool. And then they've just cast Bill Moyers. Or sorry, Stephen Moyer, not Bill Moyers. That'd be weird.
he's going to be providing commentary.
Stephen Moyer from True Blood. And he is also Anna Paquin's husband, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, on the set of True Blood.
I guess they did. And he also was in the short-lived Bastard Executioner. He is described as an ambitious attorney trying to balance demands of his job at the DA's office with his responsibilities to his family. He is one of the parents of the mutant children.
Okay.
So he's going to be sort of the star. Here's the other question, and I think this is just speculation. I doubt there's anything to it. But if he's married to Anna Paquin and he's worked with her before,
he'd be like, hey, babe.
Can they bring in Rogue?
The weird thing is, like, I mean, like, they can always make it work, and I guess her age means that she'll, broadly speaking, the X-Men movies were kind of occurring in real time,
yeah.
So if it was in 2017, then Rogue would be about the age that Anna Paquin is.
Yeah.
I could see them doing that.
Yeah, we'll see.
Kind of interesting.
I'm actually really excited about this X-Men show, partly because I've liked Legion.
Yeah.
But I think this could be a fun show.
I think it was smart to bring in Matt Nix. Mm-hmm. I think he just makes good television.
He can do sort of that lightweight but has little consequences.
What did he make? I'm sorry.
Burn Notice, The Good Guys, which is a great show. Mm-hmm. Which only went one season, but it's a fantastic show.
But Burn Notice is a pretty good, you know.
And Matt Nix is also, he's been involved in some other stuff recently. He has, in addition to Burn Notice, in addition to The Good Guys, I think he's working on APB right now. Yeah. He's one of the writers and developers of APB, which has been solid. And he's working on a show called Complications, which is a medical drama. I don't know much about that one. And a show called The Comedians, which was Billy Crystal and
But that was
not a great show from all accounts, but it was him and somebody else working on it.
I'd really like for this to be good. You know, I have a fondness, even though it's waned a bit with the last movie or two of for the movie versions, Movieverse X-Men.
Yep.
And if they can tap into some of what was good about that, along with, you know, the serialized format, which we know can work with comic book characters, then I can be down for it.
This is on Fox, so I mean, Fox does throw money at their shows pretty well.
Yeah, they usually cancel them after one season.
They usually cancel them, but they also did X-Files and a bunch of other shows that lasted for quite a while. So
Simpsons would be one of them.
since this has gone on for what? What is it, 37 quadrillion years now?
Yes, yes. It's gone on as many years as there are dollars in the bank account of Ryan Reynolds.
Yes, exactly. It's weird. It's exactly that. You know that whole Lincoln Kennedy assassination?
Yeah, weirdness? Yeah. It's another
it's
one of
same,
those.
It's what? The same kind of thing, yeah. We have other casting news from Marvel. And this is another – this I keep talking about Inhumans and I'm not that interested in it. But every casting news makes me more interested. They have cast Black Bolt.
Yeah.
And the guy that cast is Anson Mount, who was the lead in Hell on Wheels, the AMC Western.
Oh, never seen it, but
this guy's got some chops. He's a good. He's a guy who can do sort of physical presence.
Intense and handsome.
Yeah, intense and handsome. Yeah.
I'm also. I mean, you sign on for a role, have no speaking parts.
Yeah.
There's ways around that. He could have an internal monologue going on or something like that. We the viewers might hear his thoughts.
I am Black Bolt. These are my Inhumans. I cannot talk. That is my dog, and he teleports.
To be my Inhumans.
Yes, exactly. They can't hear me, but I say it in my head anyway.
Dear God, let's hope it's better than that. I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. isn't mine.
All I ask is that it's as good as that.
At any rate, the casting on this is good. So that's Black Bolt and Maximus cast. Curious who Medusa is going to be, because that's also pretty important.
You have to cast your Gorgon and Karnak.
Yeah, but Medusa's the really important one.
Yeah, it's true.
And who are they going to cast as Lockjaw? Because that's important, too.
That's a CGI dog.
No, they had to cast a real dog.
A regular dog and just put a tuning fork.
Yes, exactly.
and they digitally biggin' him.
No, I think they should get like one of those big old German Shepherd. Not German Shepherds.
Mastiffs.
Yeah, Mastiff. I think you just do that.
Sure.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. He just runs around the set. He's not even trained. Just runs around the set with a tuning fork on.
Lockjaw.
Anyway, this is why none of us should be involved in making TV for Marvel.
Correct.
There is another DC development, which is that they have cast their Black Lightning for the Black Lightning show.
Black Bolt, Black Lightning.
Blink. sounds kind of like Black.
Yes. I saw this story, but I don't know if it was somebody I knew.
It's somebody named Cress Williams.
Which, I know that name.
Yeah, I don't know who he is.
Is he like, I know he's supposed to be a slightly older hero. Is he like a 40-something
guy?
Okay,
he was on Heart of Dixie, which is a show I'm sure none of us have watched.
Right, but I think, he was like one of the leads or something on it, right?
Yes. He is born in 1970, so he's our age, my age. Well, he was in Code Black, that show about a hospital.
Okay. I saw an episode of that.
Okay, never seen it. He was on Friday Night Lights as Ornette Howard. I can't remember that character.
This is one of the later seasons.
He was on Prison Break as Wyatt. Never saw Prison Break. He was on Grey's Anatomy as Tucker Jones. He was on ER as Officer Reggie Moore. He played Lester in two episodes of The West Wing, which I don't remember. He was in Veronica Mars. I have clearly seen this guy. I just don't remember him.
Right, right. But it sounds like there's some good shows in that mix. It sounds like he's probably got some chops.
He was on an episode. He was Steve Saris on Sports Night.
Oh.
You know who that is. Okay, I know who that is. He's the guy who had the crack up on – you never seen Sports Night, right, Dave?
Yeah.
He's the guy who had a crack up about his ex-girlfriend on TV.
Yeah,
when
he was like obsessed. Okay.
Yeah, I get it. Now I see it.
And was he a decent actor?
Oh, he's funny. Yeah. Cool. He was good. And he's, like I say, he's done a lot of working. So, so this is cool.
It's hilarious that one role.
That one episode.
Yep. Now, we know that is the idea that he's essentially retired on it and his daughter is getting into the superhero game?
That was the basic idea. He's going to be in his 40s. So.
Because that means that his daughter is going to need to be a strong actress.
So it sounds like basically he's a man who cast aside his superintendent years ago, only to be pulled back into action once more when a student of his is embroiled in gang warfare. So that's interesting.
Is he the lead? Is he in fact kind of like back on the streets?
He's too
old for this shit.
But his daughter is supposed to be involved somehow.
Okay.
So, that'll be interesting.
Yeah. Definitely interested to see what they can do with that.
And again,
is it set in a fictional DC city?
It doesn't say.
Okay.
But, you know, here's the thing. They keep saying it's not going to be, it's going to be on CW, but it's not going to tie in with their CW shows.
Which is silly.
I do hope that they break that rule as quickly as they did with Supergirl.
Yeah.
All right. There is big news for the Batman movie. Matt Reeves, who last week I think spent all his time denying he was going to direct it, is directing it.
So remind me again, what is Matt Reeves?
So Matt Reeves has done the Planet of the Apes movies.
Oh, okay.
And Cloverfield.
The original Cloverfield?
The original Cloverfield.
That's interesting. That's not a bad... I mean,
it's not a bad resume. I don't like Cloverfield, but that was just because it made me ill.
Yeah, you watched about 2 minutes of
it. Yeah, I had to run.
Right. That's actually not an assessment of the movie so much as it is an assessment of your weak physiology.
That's his shaky cam crap.
And yeah. I have a fondness for Cloverfield. I actually just rewatched it and I enjoyed it.
I have not rewatched it in many of the movies.
Yeah, Planet of the Apes movies are really good.
What's he directing?
He's directing Batman.
Batman. Right, that's right. We all knew that. Yeah, we knew that he stepped down or whatever. Yeah. That's interesting. I could see it.
I'm glad that we didn't get the last minute save by Zack Snyder and say, "Oh, I'll direct it. Oh, it's fine."
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I guess if nothing else, Matt Reeves jumped in front of Zack Snyder, and we should thank him for that.
I guess I've started seeing movie posters for Wonder Woman, so it's this year.
It's in a couple months.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not that far off. It's like right after Guardians.
That one, I think, will determine if there is the spark of life to the DC franchise. Like, it's probably enough for them to get to kind of amble on and make some money. But
if there's any hope for it to ever be good, Wonder Woman's got to be good.
Become a strong competitor.
Well, they also have to figure out a way to get Ben Affleck to stay, because I feel like he doesn't even want to be Batman at the moment.
Yeah, you know, what's one more Batman? This will be like their fifth one. So
I guess I say
bring back Keith.
He's the Vulture. Marvel is co-opted him.
Ben needs some money.
They should do.
Michael Keaton got to eat.
Now that Michael Keaton is older, because it was 89, it was like almost 30 years ago. 2019. Here's what I'm saying. 2019. Batman 89, The Dark Knight. So Tim Burton comes back and does his version of The Dark Knight Returns.
I'm absolutely on board this.
In that universe. We see what happened to Knox 30 years down the road.
Yes. Yeah. I want to see the aging Vicky Vale.
Jack Nicholson is the aging Joker.
Well,
I mean, Joker got splatted.
Got splatted.
You know what, though? There was that laughing bag. There was also the implication that maybe he survived.
I mean, it showed a lot
Tim
of
Burton
blood.
Generally, he kills people off.
Maybe he came back with a deal through Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice 2, Batman 4, Batman 5. Or would this be Batman 3 because there's only two Tim Burton ones?
You know, if we get him back, I want to go ahead and go for the full weird menagerie, and I need tar barfing penguin.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Danny DeVito's free.
Michelle Pfeiffer, Catwoman.
Yeah. Oh, this should all happen. Michelle Pfeiffer could play the Catwoman role. I mean, just you adapt Dark Knight Returns, but in the same way that Batman 89 adapted things.
Is that actor, was it Robert Wool who played Knox?
Yeah,
Is he still alive?
He's still alive.
Has he done anything?
Not really. He had that show on HBO like 20 years ago.
Yeah, that was so long ago.
How would you incorporate Max Schreck into this?
Max Schreck. He would wander in and be like, still be confused about whether or not Batman was Bruce Wayne.
Dad, stop.
Anyway, Batman 2019, make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tim Burton, you are needed.
The bat signal has gone out.
You know Johnny Depp's going to be in it.
Yeah.
He could play the Riddler or something. Since the two that never happened, never happened. Yep. So. I believe this is a better idea than anything Matt Reeves is going to give us. I'm sorry.
You never know.
Batman could be great. But it's not going to be as great as 2019 Batman.
I'll agree with you.
Or as Nicolas Cage Superman.
Oh, Nicolas Cage Superman should guest star in that.
That's right.
Because Superman's in it. Oh, my God. This has to happen. Make it happen.
That's right. With his billowing mullet.
Yep.
He had like a light up suit or something.
Yeah, he had some kind of power suit or whatever from when they revived him. Because the movie, I think, script had a version of the death of Superman in it, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay,
along with a giant spider, so you'll like it, Nick.
I do like giant spiders.
Who would Tim Burton cast as the mutant leader?
The mutant leader?
Bottom Carter.
I think, died just recently, but the guy who played the wrestler Tor. In what do you call it? Ed Wood, who was like a zombie in Ed Wood, the original movie, in Plan 9 from Outer Space. That's my first thought. That's like the one beefy actor he knows.
By the way, since Commissioner Gordon was sort of a nothing guy in the Burton films, I think you should recast, and Frank Langella should play older Commissioner Gordon.
I'm down for it.
Yeah,
you have to bring in Anthony Michael Hall.
Oh, that's right. Anthony Michael Hall.
From Edward Scissorhands and
seen anything else from him?
He was in the Nolan verse. He's a Nolan guy.
Oh, he's a Nolan guy.
Yeah, he was the newscaster.
Oh, that's right.
So he's off limits.
But he's part of the Tim Burton verse.
I know. But this should totally happen.
Yeah. I feel like Helena Bonham Carter could be in there as like Talia or something like that. Yeah, you know,
but Talia's not in Dark Knight Returns.
That's true, but he's going to Burton it up anyway.
No, you know who Helena Bonham Carter should be? She should be the girl with the Nazi tits.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. She could be mutant gang leader's girlfriend or yes. whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, this is. I'm sorry.
Off the rails.
We've utterly ruined Batman for me because there's no way it's going to be this.
What is our next topic?
The big story that's coming called The Button that is a Flash Batman crossover.
Yes. This is in the comics.
And the lenticular cover of Flash 2022.
Oh, right. The button being presumably the smiley face button from Watchmen that will be investigated.
The lenticular for Flash number 22 is a very interesting cover because it shows Jay Garrick.
Right.
Which implies that the Watchmen stuff is also going to tie into bringing back the JSA, which we've all been wanting.
Yep. Makes sense. You know what's going to be weird is if, like, since we know that the previous DC, you know, the DC Rebirth era was, like, what, Dr. Manhattan's tinkering? Yeah. We know at least that sort of basic concept was probably part of it.
Or New 52 was.
Right. New 52, rather.
Was Dr. Manhattan's tinkering.
And, were we just talking about?
Talking about Jay Garrick and
Jay Garrick. Yeah, I wonder if they're going to have something as weird as the possibility that they are like his attempt to create the Minutemen from the Watchmen verse.
Looking at the lenticular, it's Jay Garrick sort of smoking and looking in the pose like he's just come through the dimensional barrier. I have a feeling the JSA is going to have. Basically escaped their world into the
smoke is rising from his body from like speed. Not that he's.
No, I mean he's puffing away. Look, he's from
he
the 40s.
Jay Garrick smoking, and he's from the 40s.
Yes, I do mean that there's smoke
keeps
coming.
The lungs clean and cool for a good run.
Yes. No, I did mean that his smoke was coming off his body, but he is from the 40s, so he does seem the kind of guy who would like smoke on airplanes and while running across dimensional barriers.
And he's smoking hot.
Are you mentioning the other character that is in?
I don't know the other character.
Oh, well, there is another character involved as well. Oh, okay. It is a New 52 version of the character. And that's Zoom.
Okay.
He's coming.
Reverse
out.
Flash.
What I want to see in this for either good or whether it comes out good or ill is like I need to see some characters from Watchmen.
Yeah.
I need for it to be more than just Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah.
I need some.
Well, we already know Ozymandias is involved.
Right.
So and everybody else is dead, right?
Ozymandias-ish. presuming that there's like not some. I mean, yeah, that it
all
takes place. Well, Dr.
Manhattan could have resurrected versions of the.
That's true.
Right. Yeah, with his godlike power, he could potentially do anything. We could even see Bubastis.
Here, how about this? This is for all the Alan Moore fans out there who are scratching their brains out the notion of Watchmen being the DC universe.
Yeah.
A miniseries pitting a teamed up Batman Rorschach versus comedian Joker.
Comedian's not a villain.
No, but he makes jokes, and the Joker is a Joker guy. I could see it fitting together.
You should definitely write that.
Well, there was that weird rumor that the comedian was one of the three Jokers.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So
that's as good as my Batman 2019 idea, at least.
All right.
But that's interesting. I'm looking forward to have the JSA back. I'm, as you know, mostly out of the DC Rebirth. I read like New Superman and Justice League of America.
But this 4-part is going to be written by Johns, right?
I don't know.
Oh no, no, it's Kevin.
It's Tom King and Williamson, right?
Right, Josh Williamson. It is.
Not Kevin Williamson. That's the TV guy.
That's the TV guy.
All right. Finally, we bid a fond farewell to Bill Paxton,
one of the great genre actors, and just in generally a great character actor.
Yeah,
but like a guy who was in every movie I saw in the 1980s.
Yeah, me too. I mean, like Aliens. He's Aliens.
Like I grew up with
Terminator,
it.
Weird Science. Yep. What else am I missing? Predator 2, which I know you don't have a fond for, but it's interesting that he's in all those
was
things.
He the first person killed by the Terminator.
He is the he's yes.
If you don't count like I guess maybe opening
the cop. Scenes. Terminator kills the cop. When he first shows up, right?
Does he?
Or is that in Terminator 2?
Because I think in the first one, like, you don't quite know whether Michael Biehn is the good guy or the bad guy.
You don't.
At first.
Yeah, the Terminator walks over naked, and Bill Paxton is the spiky-haired dude.
Wash day tomorrow.
Yep. And he kills him.
Hanging out with his buddies.
Yep.
Meaning that the iconic, like, jacket and stuff like that that the Terminator wears throughout the rest of that movie is Bill Paxton's jacket.
That is correct.
I basically woke up on Sunday and my wife told me, that was the first thing I heard was Bill Paxton had passed away. And I was like, well, that sucks. We have to watch Twister.
Yeah. and people, if you've been following the news, you probably saw that meteorologists, lots of different ones have been doing cool tributes where they get, yeah, because Twister, as ridiculous as it is in its very watchable way, did like kind of put storm chasing on the map and kind of, I mean, for all I know, it actually like ended up kind of getting him funding by making it a sort of more popular, sexy kind of.
Are you saying they got corporate sponsorship like Jonas?
Jonas.
But they did this cool tribute where they like had all the stations like align there.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what, but like project their like a thing over their city so that they spelled out Bill Paxton's initials like on the like weather maps and stuff like that.
I hope nobody died because they looked at that weather report.
What's that?
People look at the weather report and they're like, oh, there's a tornado. Like, no, we're just making the pee. Oh, God.
Right.
It's all going to hold
They were all actual tornado warnings.
Yes.
Grandma had a heart attack.
But, I mean, in addition to that, he was the lead on Big Love on HBO.
Yep.
He had a turn on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where he's one of the best things about that show. Like, Paxton was great, and he was only 61, and this sucks.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, he was at his
nicest guys.
And he was one of the nicest guys.
Which is ironic, because he played a lot of weasels.
Yeah, he did.
He did.
Yeah. And he was great at it. Like, the weasel car salesman in True Lies.
Oh, man, yeah.
The brother Chet in Weird Science. Chet.
Yeah.
I saw somebody who'd put together a master edit of like 3 minutes of Chet just being the douchebaggiest person of all time.
Yep.
And it's great. Like, and like, I feel like when that role was written that it was like made for him.
Yeah.
But also that, who was the director writer?
That was,
John Hughes.
John Hughes. Yeah.
That he was clearly had a bit of love for Chet.
Yeah.
That he was like, I will create the ultimate love to hate scumbag.
And also, it's also weird. I mean, Bill Paxton was actually on a current ABC show.
He was playing Denzel Washington's role in Training Day.
And I guess I don't know what they're going
to
do.
From what I hear, Nick, that's not the biggest loss to lose that show.
Well, no, not
maybe
really.
Not Paxton's best final role. Is the Raul Julia Street Fighter thing?
Maybe so.
Yeah, you don't get to choose it.
He also was in Titanic. People forgot.
Oh, yeah, he was in Titanic, right. Yeah.
Yeah, he was the bridging story guy.
Wasn't he in the Alamo? The one that filmed in Austin?
I think that's right.
I think so. Yeah. He was a Texan. And
he was the crazy drill sergeant in Edge of Tomorrow, the Tom Cruise movie.
Yep, that was one of the recent ones. Yeah.
I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, he's great in it.
Yeah, if anybody, if you haven't seen Edge of Tomorrow, that's a really good kind of, that was a nice, pleasant surprise sci-fi action movie.
Man, Paxton shows up in a ton of stuff, and he's always good.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Well, you know what? I saw him talking, an interview snippet where he talked about his fondness for Jack Nicholson, and they asked him why, and he said that there was like something like whenever every role Nicholson was in, he kind of put a little extra something into it, he felt like, so that it was always sort of these unforgettable characters. And I feel like you can see that he's been doing that his whole life, too.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, like, there's a reason why we all remember, Hudson from Aliens?
Yeah, he's not the lead.
Right, he's not the lead. In fact, he gets unceremoniously killed off. Well, actually, he gets ceremoniously killed off. And he gets a great ending.
Of course, a few big movies were missing, as like Apollo 13.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That was one of his big leading ones.
And also Tombstone.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was one of the
Irks.
Yeah.
Got to be a good guy in that one.
The guy had a great career. He was nowhere near done, and this sucks.
It sucks. Yep.
All right. That wraps up our news. We'll be back in just a second to talk comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of March 1st, 2017. And we're doing something a little different this week. Dave had a little trouble finding some stuff he loved this week.
Yep, this was just not like a big week for me.
And Nick and I had the opposite problem in that each of us had like 6 picks.
Yep. Correct.
So we're each stealing half of Dave's picks.
Yes.
So that Nick and I will have 3 picks and Dave will have merely 1. So Dave, why don't you kick us off with your 1 pick?
Well, and then I have to listen to y'all talk for like an hour.
That's right.
I think y'all should. Okay.
That's your penance.
The irony of this pick is that it's based on a show that I had sort of mixed feelings about, but kind of have wanted to go back to, actually. So this is from the Archie Comics line, the Riverdale one-shot based on the TV show and essentially a prequel to it.
Yep.
It's 4 connected stories focusing on sort of the big leads, Archie, Betty, Veronica, and Jughead. All over the, I guess it's over the summer vacation, right?
Yeah, it's basically prior to the first episode of Riverdale.
They all link up to right up to sort of like where the show begins in kind of neat ways.
Yeah,
but they're filling in little backstory stuff, and I found it all pretty compelling. You know, let's see. Archie's, for instance, this focuses in on his fling with, was it Miss Grundy?
Yeah, and his working instruction. Like, it sort of expands on what we'd heard in exposition in the first episode.
Right. But more specifically, kind of what you see is how he... actually, that might have been more in Jughead's story, but like he kind of left his buddy in a lurch.
Too. Yeah, you see why he and Jughead were on the outs.
Right, he's kind of like had his sexual awakening and kind of left his friend behind.
Yep.
And there's a lot of sort of internal monologuing of these. That's so you get some interesting character insights.
Yep.
With Betty, you see her off doing her internship at, like, what is it, kind of like a BuzzFeedy type thing or something?
Well, like she's that. Like, and she's helping, like, Toni Morrison at her signing.
She's actually, like, I forgot, it's actually, like, they're name dropping real stuff. Hello Giggles, that's a real website.
Yeah. Oh, really? It's Hello Giggles? That's interesting.
Right, and yeah, the author, Toni Morrison, and so, yeah, there's definitely some real stuff going on there. And it has, like, kind of her... flirting with the possibility of a summer fling.
Yep.
You sort of see what happens with going on with that.
You know what the connective tissue in all this is, as I think about it, is this is all about them sort of making a transition to, like, teenagerhood. Like, Archie sort of has this fling and discovers he likes to do music.
Right.
Betty sort of just realizes how much she likes Archie. Jughead sort of discovers what he's going to write his movie about. Veronica sort of discovers what the rich life that she had is not what she thought she had.
Yep.
It's all about sort of their transformation from the people they were to the people they become when they get to Riverdale.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair assessment. This is a one shot. So I would say that anybody who's watching and enjoying the show should definitely pick it up.
100%.
But also, if you're just kind of curious about a little bit about what the show's like and you kind of want a bit of a sample of it, this is a good way to check it out. The different art styles, because there's four different stories in it,
yep,
are reminiscent of some of the styles that you've seen on some of the Archie reboot books.
Yeah.
Archie, Jughead, Josie and the Pussycats, etc. And so it almost like it's not quite like they didn't get people to go and photorealistically recreate the actors,
right? Which I think was the right move.
So it's an interesting sort of bridging point between like the sort of the look of the kind of modern day comics and the tone of the show. Which somebody said the word shit in there, and I was like, well, what?
Yeah.
You can't know.
That's right. CW holds no bards.
Archie don't give a shit. they just use it all the time. Jughead, you want some more hamburgers? I don't give a shit.
Shit, no.
Are you current, Randy?
No, I'm a couple of episodes behind.
Oh, man, I've really, really dug.
You say Archie's dating Veronica now? Oh, shit.
Yeah, I'm actually really liking Riverdale as well. I just haven't had a chance to catch up.
It's a really smart show.
But yeah, this is really good, and it's of a piece with the Archie stuff that's been coming on.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
All right, guys, begin your long litany of titles.
Begin our assault. Nick, begin your assault.
Okay. Well, all three of my books are super, super violent, as I'm just realizing.
Yeah, you did. You got all the violent ones.
You got all the violent ones.
You know what? I'm just going to just briefly interject here and say, actually, that's weirdly part of the reason why I'm not plugging into, I think, some of these things is I feel a little OD'd on violence.
Most of mine are – well, okay, one of mine is super violent. The other two, though, are sort of sweet character pieces.
Right, and I think at least one of those is one that I was close to making my pick as well.
And here's the thing about mine. They might be violent, but they have good stories.
Yeah.
First one I want to talk about is Extremity.
Yep.
And that's a new book by Image and Skybound.
Yep.
And this sort of blends the whole nature of like a sci-fi with fantasy elements.
Yeah.
About sort of a family who has a army that gets kind of mowed down in a lot of ways.
It feels somewhat European post-apocalyptic to me.
Yeah, a little bit. But it focuses on a young girl, sort of the, not heir to the throne, but she's definitely part of the important, she's the daughter of
the war chief,
essentially. Yeah. And she was like this artist and very, and got her hand taken off by like a group of individuals.
Are they aliens? I couldn't get a sense of whether they were aliens or barbarians or whatever they were.
They're barbarians.
So basically, yeah, they come and this is all like space. They got like flying ships and stuff.
Yeah.
But like they came and they like cut her hand off and so she couldn't draw anymore. And she gets like a cybernetic arm replacement and her mom was killed.
Chopped her hand off who had some kind of gauntlet with like chomper things on it?
That's her.
Okay, that's actually hers.
Yeah,
because that thing looks super cool.
Yeah,
it does. And that's a lot of this. The artist here is it Mike Spicer?
No, he's the colorist.
Oh yes,
it's the same writer.
So Daniel Warren Johnson, who wrote and drew this.
Name I don't know, but man, am I impressed.
His art, just his art is fantastic. But yeah. The designs for all, like, the warships, the characters.
There's a little Paul Pope.
Somewhere between Paul Pope and James Stokoe.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit of Brandon Graham, but James Stokoe.
Brandon Graham's,
it's not as cartoony as his, but it does detail. Have his futurism kind of...
His sensibilities is what I was thinking,
But James clearly Stokoe. Has an aesthetic in his head when he's drawing his cityscapes and stuff. And this artist clearly does.
This is a stunning looking book. That's the other commonality between your three books. All three of them have great artwork.
They do. But I feel like this could be just out of the pages of Heavy Metal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's dark. It's bloody.
Heavy meat dog.
But I like the family dynamic of the characters. There's some good attention to detail. And I just kind of got caught up in sort of the action piece of it. And I'm very curious to see where they take it. This obviously has a lot more story to tell. So,
Image is having a great year so far.
Yeah.
This is like the third or fourth book I've been like, oh, this is probably going to wind up on best of lists.
Yeah. So, yes, definitely check out Extremity number one.
All right. So I'm going to start with the non-Image book in my list because there's two other Image ones. This is a Boom book. It's their Kaboom, their sort of creator-owned line. Same company that does like Lumberjanes and Backstagers and that kind of thing. This is called Brave Chef Brianna. It is by Sam Sykes, illustrated by Selena Espiritu, which, by the way, is the coolest name ever.
Yeah.
Colored by Sarah Stern. It is about a...
That has the same cadence as, like, Pretty Soldier, Sailor Moon,
It's about a girl who's a chef and a baker, and she's a family of chefs. And their father, I believe Sven, of the famous Sven's Kitchen... He has talk show. He has shows, cookbooks, all this kind of stuff. He's like one of these big cooking impresarios. He gathers the children together. He says, the doctor says he has 2 or 3 years left to live. He's going to leave the shows, the cookbooks, and all that stuff to whoever has the most successful restaurant when he dies. So they're all supposed to go to a different city and make their successful restaurants. The rest of these guys, all their brothers have sort of been... they've had years of working in restaurants. She just got a culinary school. So she's got to find a place where they're not going to go. She's got to find somewhere cheap. So she goes to a place called Monster City, which is full of monsters that don't eat human food. So she's cooking, and she first, of course, runs into a sort of a harpy who agrees to work with her because no one else will work with her because humans hate monsters, which is kind of funny. And then she's serving her food, and... monsters are basically not allowed to eat like flour or beef or anything else. So she can't make food for any of them. And it's sort of a, how is she going to serve these people? And, there's twists and turns, but it's really fun. It's really bright. And, I really like this. It reminds me of the space lunchtime battle that Oni did. Whereas that one sort of lost me after a little bit. This one seems a little more, the characters seem a little stronger. It's not quite as out there, but I really like this. I did not have many expectations for this, but I would definitely recommend people give this one a shot. Nick, what else you got?
So mine is not as mine's a little more out there. It's a Bullseye number two.
Yep.
It's not as light as your pick.
Nope.
But this is continuous sort of the cavalcade of violence, the gleeful violence that the character Bullseye loves.
Darkly
to do.
Comic, right?
It's darkly
very
comedic.
Much so.
But it's basically Bullseye. He was tasked with going into a country and rescuing the son of a gang leader of New
something
York.
Like that from this like super sadist. This is doing what Thanos and Darth Vader and some of those do, which is if you've got a really sadistic bad guy, let him be a sadistic bad guy. But his villain's got to be worse. And they do a good job of that. And they also have, you also have a good guy working against them, which is that FBI agent who recruits a couple of obscure Daredevil villains to go after him, which I love.
Yeah, I thought that was fantastic, seeing those guys again. But I have to say, Guillermo Sano's artwork is gorgeous.
Oh, it's fantastic art.
I just love, Ed Brisson has a knack for writing Bullseye that I haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah.
And I feel like the story has a lot of good twists and turns that I wasn't expecting. Like Randy said, there's a few Daredevil villains that pop up that was cool to see. And I just think that that's interesting. There's just – I like Bullseye. I like how he's portrayed.
Yeah, if you wanted something like an R-rated kind of Suicide Squad, this is probably something I would point you to.
Yeah. I love sort of just everyone thinks Bullseye's dead, and some people don't even think that his rep matches what he is. And the ending is fantastic. I can't wait to see what happens. Yeah. So,
well, like I say, I think the trick with this is it's just like Darkseid or just like Darth Vader and Thanos. If you're going to make – you want your bad guys – you know what people want. They want to be badasses. They want to be scary.
But if he was just wholesale slaughtering innocents,
that's no fun. Might
be a little
– yeah.
But I feel like – I never felt like Bullseye could carry a book.
Yeah, me neither.
I basically, he's a Daredevil villain that should show up every once in a while.
Well, this is a miniseries,
right? It is a miniseries. Yeah. It's a six-issue mini. But, I mean, still, that's – I did not see that as a possibility, and Ed Brisson has proved me wrong.
Yeah, it's really good.
What is your next pick?
My next pick is Jeff Lemire's Royal City, which is – we've been anticipating this one – is Jeff Lemire writing and drawing. Yep. He actually has a text piece in the back where he talks about – he says that he doesn't usually do these personal essays. It's just not a thing he usually does, but this was something special for him that basically – he's been doing all kinds of stuff. You know, he's been doing Descender and stuff at Marvel. And he said, you know, he's like, I want to do a lot. I want to do something different. He said, I've been really enjoying what I've been doing, but I wanted to go back and do something more grounded stories about real people. You know, not as high concept on a genre.
All right. He likened it a little bit to his work on Essex County. Yeah.
And he said, he's like, why not do more Essex County? Well, why not? You know, he's like, well, I was 29. Now I'm 40. It's very different. So this is basically – he specifically says, you know, I hope people don't call it a slice of life book because it's not. This is about a guy sort of coming back to his town, Royal City, which feels a little New Orleans-ish to me. I guess it's actually not. It's like a factory town. But it's a family. It's brothers, and their dad had sort of a stroke. And it's about how these brothers and sisters and the mom sort of relate to each other. And there's also this running theme of – we can't tell if it's maybe one of the brothers who died or if – but they keep seeing him at different ages throughout.
It's sort of like the family members see this brother at the age they believe him to be.
Yeah, it's almost like a ghost story kind
of
thing.
Right, there's a sort of surreal quality to it that like – I mean it's sort of slice of life I suppose in some senses, but sort of slice of life in the same way that Twin Peaks was slice of life.
Right, yeah.
Like it wasn't overtly supernatural, but it was – very unusual and had really memorable characters and stuff.
One of the arcs I really like is that the sister is trying to get them to basically turn on the factory and replace it with a waterfront resort and golf course. And she's sort of arguing that sort of the manufacturing that everybody lives on here is going away one way or the other, and that they need to get ahead of it. And
she's trying to revitalize the town.
And of course, her husband works for that plant, and you know all their family is related to it, and so she's sort of in a hated place because of this. But it's interesting to see it. All the character stuff is really good. The artwork is stunning. If you've never seen Lemire's art, if you haven't read like Sweet Tooth,
it's amazing.
He's really really good.
Or AD.
This is a big double sized issue.
Right, you get a ton for your money.
It's $5, but it is like 40 pages. And there's behind the scenes stuff. There's a journal entry. There's his piece. He does a mixtape for the music he listened to while he was creating it. This is great. And Lemire is, I think for me, maybe the most diverse writer in comics. Like he can write so much different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like Thanos and Descender and the Old Man Logan and all the stuff he writes is so different from each other. And Royal City is like that. It's something different, but it still feels like one of the strongest writers in comics. So I definitely recommend this. Nick, what is your third pick?
My third pick is a new Vertigo book.
Yep.
Which, this is by Justin Jordan and artist, is it Mustafa?
Ibrahim Mustafa. Who did variant covers on Dr. Fate. I feel like I've seen him elsewhere, but great art.
But this sort of is a story about basically – is it the government gathering together?
This like black ops part of the government gathers together all these kids who are sociopaths who they thought might become serial killers and trains them to be secret agents and killers. And then things go wrong.
Of course things go wrong. And it's kind of this takes place after all that has happened.
25 years later.
25 years after that branch has supposedly been destroyed.
Yep.
And some of those killers are still around.
It looks like they're
going to... Where's the perspective from, or does it just rotate around?
It rotates around a little bit. They show one of the kids who's being recruited, and they also show one of the agents who sort of did the recruiting and training.
Okay.
And it's jumping back from the past to the current day.
Yeah.
It's Justin Jordan writing. Yes. He's great at the high concept. This is a great high concept.
I mean, this is the guy who came up with the Strange Tales of Luther Strode, and this feels in line with that. But
it also reminds me of Deadly Class.
Yeah, it does. There's a little bit of that in there. And I feel like this is a story that's ripe for television or something like that.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's so,
you know who the art reminds me of a little bit is Derek Robertson?
Yeah, Derek Robertson. I was going to say a little bit of Gary Frank, but...
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, kind of that kind of intensity of detail.
But, I mean, there's a little bit of, like, Battle Royale in here where kids are sort of made to...
the training of the kids
training is just insane. But again, I like the characters. I think the concept is so interesting and unique that I feel like it lends credence to the kind of utter violence of the piece.
Yeah, I agree.
So... I'm really impressed with it, and I like Justin Jordan. So.
Yeah, me too. I didn't have expectations for this because Vertigo's been sort of off for me, I thought this was a really good first issue.
Yep.
All right, my final pick is also in the violence and sex realm, which is Rat Queens number one. Rat Queens is back. I'm so happy to have it back. Curtis Wiebe is writing. The new artist is Owen Gianni, and as is tradition with Rat Queens, it's great art.
Yeah.
He's had these artistic difficulties, but every time he gets an artist, it's a great artist. And it sort of picks up where it left off. So Hannah's dad is now sort of helping them out. He's been rescued from the prison he was in.
They're Jarvis.
And it's all about the Rat Queens going back out and becoming adventurers again. They make a direct reference to, all that trouble. It's nice for us to get back out and just adventure again. So this is definitely a back to basics Rat Queens.
Yeah.
Somebody can jump in on this without having read the previous stuff.
They're bringing in the transgendered orc Braga and making her a regular member, which is cool. And then there's I don't reveal too much, but there's a new group introduced in here, which is a great sort of flip side to the Rat Queens.
Yep.
And this is just, this is what Rat Queens always has been, which is a fun D&D comic, raucous fun D&D comic.
And people don't know it's R-rated raucous.
Oh, fun. Very R-rated. Yes.
They use the strong language. The characters party down a little bit, and yet, there is sort of heart to it. I mean, it has some depth of character. It's just that it's going to make a dirty joke right after it shows that.
Oh, sure, yeah. It's a great first issue back, and I'm glad to have it back. It definitely did not miss a step. Also on my list this week, quite a bit of stuff actually. The Once and Future Queen, which is a Dark Horse book that, again, really nice art, and is a the premise is a young female chess player who finds out that she's the heir to King Arthur, basically. And she starts meeting up with her Knights of the Round Table in the modern day. Kind of hard to describe, but a fun take on the Arthurian myths. Third issue of Unstoppable Wasp, featuring Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. Really loving this book. It's a nice, optimistic girls in science book. Hawkeye number 4 wraps up its first storyline. Moon Knight number 12 continues to go back and show us a little more of the origin of Moon Knight. Doctor Strange number 18 teams him up with Thor, and then continues the fight against the misery that he created early on in the book. Champions number 6 introduces an anti-champion, who I guess were around in the Monsters Unleashed issue.
Right. Yeah, they're kind of like the more mercenary, amoral youth team.
Yep. I don't want to say Trump voters, but Trump voters.
No. They would be hired by him, but I don't think they have any loyalty.
Yeah, you're
at
right.
All.
They
have no political affiliations. Yeah. Dead No More, The Clone Conspiracy Omega is the wrap up of the Clone Conspiracy stuff. Has really nice art by Corey Smith, and I guess Mark Bagley does a story in here too. So basically, it sort of wraps up the Clone Conspiracy story, but it also has a Peter David Mark Bagley story that leads into Scarlet Spider, and it also has a backup story at the end that leads into the next Spider-Man story, which is going to pit Spidey versus Norman Osborn. So that's a good wrap up for that. America number 1, which is America Chavez, gets her own book. Big Trouble in Little China, Escape from New York concludes. Really loving that series. Then there's a trade of Marguerite Bennett's Animosity, which is the one where the animals sort of come to life and are not happy about being eaten
or rather
slaughtered.
Gained sentience.
Gained sentience. Yeah, I guess they're already alive.
Most animals are alive. Yeah. Until they're in my tum tum.
And then the Lumberjanes Gotham Academy gets collected this week.
Oh, nice.
Dave, what else you got?
The only two other ones I wanted to mention were the first issue of a new James Bond miniseries called Black Box.
Yep.
I don't know what will set this one apart, but it's a cool opening, and it has some James Bond ski action, which It's always a cool thing in James Bond. And then the fourth issue of Monsters Unleashed. Now that the villain has been revealed, this kind of follows suit with what the tactics are against her and what she is actually planning to do.
Nick?
Just a few to add. The 18th issue of Batman, which continues the I Am Bane storyline.
What you told me, it sort of juxtaposes Bane's
childhood.
Childhood with Bruce's.
It's an interesting story. I really like what Tom King has done there.
Like, you got to eat nice steaks, but I had to eat rats.
Something along those lines.
Is that an actual quote?
Yeah, but hear it in Bane voice.
Don't hear it in Bane voice. Please don't.
Bane voice.
The next issue of Superman, which actually starts the Superman Reborn story.
I think it's
crossing over, I think, with Action Comics, I believe.
Yeah, it seems to be sort of a tie into the Watchmen stuff a little bit, right?
A little bit. It has the character of Oz and features a few of the people that have sort of been taken off the table.
Ozymandias?
Or the Great Wizard Oz in a weird crossover.
That's possible.
Pay no attention to that.
Next issue of Nightwing, which starts up a new storyline called Nightwing Must Die, and brings together both Damian and Nightwing again.
I feel like I know how that story's going
to
end.
There's a cool alt cover to this one. I have to mention that is a homage to the first issue of Morrison's Batman and Robin.
Okay.
It's the yellow cover with him on it. It was a fun callback. New storyline starting up in Justice League called Timeless, which features a kind of a group of Brainiac enforcers, which is these
look
weird,
really cool.
I like the designs of them.
They look like Borg Brainiacs.
They do.
With like sort of his green skin and sort of like black Borg sort of costumes or like armor and stuff with like sort of the glowing purple light. So you get the green and purple Brainiac color stuff. It's cool looking.
It is. And then the next issue of Deadpool, which starts up the story arc Till Death Do Us Part, which is basically Deadpool versus his wife, Shikla, and the monsters under the cities. So it's fun, as you would expect it to be. Reminds me a lot of some of the Remender stuff when he was doing the weird Punisher. What was that called?
Frankencastle.
Frankencastle. A little bit of that. But it was fun.
All right. We'll be back in just a second. We're going to talk about karaoke.
Yes.
And also another movie. And also we're going to do a spoiler review for Get Out. Okay, guys. Let's talk, as we always do in this segment, about karaoke.
I think we mentioned that once or twice.
We have some fondness for karaoke.
Fondness is a word. Want to do karaoke every weekend is another one.
I believe you are the intensest of us all, Randy.
I love karaoke.
I like karaoke a lot.
And I just am okay with it.
Nick is merely...
I'm a dabbler.
Nick, you were merely attended the karaoke. I was born into it, molded by it.
It's funny. That Bane will live on forever. Whether, like...
It's such a terrible version of Bane, but it's so memorable.
It is. I don't know. See, I don't necessarily even think it's terrible. I think there's some good writing in there, and there's a reason that we remember it for a reason, and it's not just because it's silly.
It is silly, though. Remember how we were all like, we were all like, you can't understand it. Like, you can't understand what he's saying when that first came out, but it's very memorable.
I remember the very first, when they like released like a little 3-minute sequence.
The opener,
That you couldn't understand it, but they cleaned it up in the actual movie.
Yeah.
Like they actually
re-cut
the dialogue.
On like the IMAX.
We did. We saw it attached to whatever Mission Impossible.
Yeah. It was the Brad Bird Mission Impossible.
Oh, that's right. Crazy.
Anyway, karaoke.
Karaoke, yes.
Bane would love karaoke.
Right. So,
Bane karaoke.
Randy and I recently did some karaoke.
We did for Kiel's birthday.
Kiel's birthday, yep. We went out to a place I think we would happily recommend, The Common Interest.
Yep.
It's a karaoke bar,
yep.
But if, like myself, you're kind of scared to get up on stage because they do have a stage thing,
yep.
And the place seems to always be bumping.
Oh, yeah.
There are private rooms that I think there's probably some smaller ones. I think we're usually in the larger one that, like, seats up to, like, 20 people.
Yeah.
And, there's, like, There's lots of what would you call it, leather seats lining the walls.
Yeah, it's a nice place.
There's tables for drinks. They have food and drink service there.
And I got their fried pickles, and they're pretty good. Yeah. And the burger that one of our friends got looked pretty good.
Lots of places are kind of BYOB, and lots of karaoke places are. But this place isn't. This is definitely they have service.
They've also got beer and wine and some good cocktails. I had some cherry limeades. They were good. It's a great place. And their song selection's amazing.
Oh, right. So, yeah, they're plugged into this thing that has, tens of thousands of songs. Yeah.
And you just go up and you type it in. It's like a search engine.
Right. And what's always interesting to me is, I could go in and type in, the name of a song, and I will not just get, I may get, two or three versions from the original artist. Here's his main version, the studio version. Here's, the way it was cut for, a movie or a live album or whatever. Yep. And then here's a bunch of covers of the song. So it is the biggest selection I've seen of anything like that.
So this time out, we brought up some of the Chicago stuff from the musical. You did Razzle Dazzle. Me and our friend Liz did All That Jazz.
Yep.
And then Liz did Mama.
Yeah, When You're Good to
Mama.
Yeah.
Which was all really fun.
Yes. And normally I was not used to show tunes sort of being at karaoke places, other than maybe Over the Rainbow or something like that. Sure. Some really big crossover one. Though.
We've done Disney stuff before.
Yeah,
right.
So
I was just that Chicago had been on my mind, and I decided to look it up. And sure enough, they have had a bunch of stuff from it. Not every single song, but a lot of them. And that was cool. Honestly, All That Jazz. Well, that was kind of the big showstopper of the night, I felt.
No, Dave. You and I had the showstoppers of the night. Because we, by popular request, performed two songs. One was Electric Six's Gay Bar, always a favorite.
Right.
And the other was...
We sing our hearts out.
Madonna's Like a Prayer, but done in growling metal style.
Yeah, like a prayer.
Yeah. That was super fun.
Yep.
How were
your voices the next day?
Well, that was definitely... I was fine. Yeah,
they were rough. In the next 10 to 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And I forget, we were wrapping up at that point, and I always like to kind of have some kind of big ballady type song to go out on. You
closed up with Four Non-Blondes, What's Going On?
The song is actually called What's Up.
What's Up, yeah.
Right. My voice was straining throughout that. But super fun to sing, because you get to go, hey.
And I got to do, since our friend Les left early, I got to do Humpty Dance. That was fun.
This is a good time to mention a general karaoke philosophy thing here, which is to say, cheesy songs and ridiculous songs can often be among the funnest.
Oh, yeah.
And so I had fun singing Smash Mouth's Walking on the Sun.
Yep. You did Build Me Up Buttercup, which I sang backup on. That was fun.
Yeah, that was nice. That was one of those ones that was a weird discovery from a few years ago that I will always remember, because that group that we were went with for whoever's birthday or whatever that was, fell right into backup without me thinking about it.
Yep.
I had heard it on our some Spotify list or something somewhere, and I was oh, this would be a fun kind of cheesy 60s song to sing.
Yep.
And then it was 100 times even funner than I expected.
That was my birthday.
It might have been.
I think that was mine. We tend to do birthday karaoke for me and for Tila.
Yeah.
But also another one that I discovered fairly recently, I did songs with when we had our, I think it was maybe All Ages Weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was Staple. I don't know, but it was Babs Tarr was here. I think it was All Ages Weekend. Babs Tarr was here, and Charles Soule was in town, and he's apparently a big karaoke fiend. And so I like to do comic book karaoke with a bunch of people. Because it was Joe Quinones was with us too.
I think I missed
this one. Yeah, you guys all missed it, and it was a blast because then writer of Doctor Strange, Cargill, showed up.
Right.
And did
writer of Doctor Strange, the movie, we should see.
Yes, did the Tenacious D song. Fuck Me Gently.
Yep.
And then Soul's great, by the way. He sang a bunch of songs. He was really good. And then Tim Doyle, and the reason I bring this up, because it ties in, Tim Doyle and Nick Darrington sang Weird Al's Dare to Be Stupid, which is glorious, and I had never seen it done in karaoke, and now it is a staple of mine. In fact, I did it on Saturday, because it is super fun, and if anyone in the room knows it, there's call and response stuff. It's a really fun song.
Yep. I really like karaoke.
I'm a huge fan.
I feel the magic of karaoke is that You don't have to be able to say.
No.
I consider myself like mediocre to poor, but I can kind of harmonize when I'm like singing with you, Randy, and other people because I can try and make my voice match you. It really helps. But I always have fun with it. You know, honestly, embarrassing yourself a little bit is kind of part of the gig.
Yes.
Because everybody else is doing it too, and you're just at that point like, screw it.
Yep.
So you can go and kind of be that little dumb superstar that you want to be when you're singing in your car, but get to do it with an audience that's going to clap along.
Yeah, yeah, it's a ton of fun.
And it was a good crowd. They were like appreciative of all the songs, whether somebody was like kind of struggling through like a serious song or like
doing goofy stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. No, it was a lot of fun, and we love karaoke here at Rogues Gallery.
Yes, it's karaoke gifts.
Nick, while we were singing our hearts out, you were singing a movie.
I was, and I probably should have been singing. I should have been singing the karaoke because the movie overall was not great. But this is Gore Verbinski's Cure for Wellness,
right, his horror movie that was like his first horror follow up since The Ring, I guess. Right? I mean, it's not a follow up to it, but his first horror movie since then.
What if it was a sequel? That'd be really weird.
That would be very weird. There's
been at least one other movie this year that I won't name that it was a stealth sequel.
Yeah, that's
it
true.
Was freaking awesome.
Then there was that sequel to The Ring this year, and it was
really bad. Oh, right. I was not even going to touch that one with a 10-foot pole. I could tell from the trailers. It's stunk.
It had Vince D'Onofrio in it.
Uh-huh.
No, but this one is kind of
the trailers looked interesting to this for me.
It's an odd duck. It's about sort of a guy who's kind of a dick. There's no other way to put it. He gets tasked by his group, the company that he works for, which is like a big power firm, to go collect a gentleman, one of the board members who has kind of disappeared and is at this sanitarium for the unwell. In
present day?
Yeah, it's present day. And then sort of uncovers this weird plot, mysteries abound.
Yeah, don't say too much because I kind of do want to see it.
And I will say this. There are great moments in here. There are moments that made me cringe. I mean, not in a bad sense, but very the uncomfortable cringe. Like some of the aspects of The Ring that dealt like with the horses and things like that.
Right, right.
There are moments in here where I literally had to look away.
Yeah.
But the overall look, the aesthetic, Gore Verbinski has an amazing eye for the for things, and the way it's shot is fantastic.
Did I understand that it was in the tradition of his Pirates of the Caribbean movies? Bloated.
It's bloated. It's 2.5 hours.
That dude needs a freaking editor.
Yeah.
It's 2.5 hours, and if it had been like an hour and a half, or even an hour and 40 minutes, I felt like it would have been terrifying.
Am I right that the Ring, is it slightly longish for a horror movie? Like, no, I think horror movies tend at, like, to be it, like 130 to 140. They kind of try and get in
like
and get out.
I think 2 hours, but The Ring felt like it moved at such a brisk
pace. Right. Now, I've never thought The Ring is long.
No.
I just was trying to think, like, was it like 220 or anything like that?
Yeah. And
I don't
like,
think it was.
The major players in here, and it's not like a huge
he's returned
cast,
to the lean Verbinski days.
Is Dane DeHaan plays the main character, and he played in Amazing Spider-Man, the Andrew Garfield. He was the Hobgoblin.
Oh, okay.
He's also in the new movie by Luc Besson, the Valerian. The Multiple Cities. But he was okay. And then there's Jason Isaacs who from the Harry Potter and the movie The Patriot, Mel Gibson's movie.
I have he was the big evil British guy, wasn't he?
Yep.
Yes. And I actually love Jason Isaacs. He's a fun character.
He's a good actor.
He's a great actor who does fun roles.
So I have a question without wanting to like give away too much, but does this veer more like towards horror or like twisted suspense?
I feel like it's more twisted suspense than it is horror.
Because I don't want to say, like, is there a ghost or is it all supernatural? I don't want to give away anything quite like that.
It's twisted horror.
Okay.
So there is a story. It's kind of a bloated story, but
I feel like I might, like, catch it when it's, like, you know, hits cable or something.
I was going to say, it's not a bad way if you're going to watch it on, like, HBO. Yeah.
Although sometimes I don't mind seeing, like, a middling horror suspense movie on the big screen. Because, you know, there the shocks and scares are kind of more intense.
This is one to see on HBO.
All right. So we are going to do a spoiler review of Get Out, the new Jordan Peele horror movie. We've all three seen it. I would like to encourage you, if you have not seen it, to turn off the podcast right now and go see Get Out. I think we all will back that up.
We all liked it.
Go see it. Look at the critics. Listen to every one of your friends who's seen it. This is a really good movie. You're going to want to see it, and you want to see it as unspoiled as possible, because the trailer already gave away more than it probably should have.
Yeah, it probably did.
Right. So don't listen to our review. If you're listening, don't listen to our review if you're going to go see it. You are forbidden.
Forbidden. Yes.
But we want to discuss it, and so if you have seen it, join us on the other side of the spoiler warning, and we'll discuss it.
Right. Spoiler warning will be this beep.
All right. So I loved this.
Yeah, I was in that camp as well.
I very liked it, and I'll see if I end up loving it over time.
Yeah. So I don't know about you guys. As I was watching this, I was kind of ahead of the movie a little bit by about like 10 minutes.
I sort of felt like the trailers did give a lot away, and I was sort of like, this is the racially charged Stepford Wives.
Yeah.
I didn't know how it was exactly going to play out. But the trailer did show enough to see, like, it's starting to unravel.
Yeah.
They showed the thing where, you know, like, you know, a flash, camera flash.
Yeah.
Kind of disrupted something. And I was like, so I knew, I felt like I knew almost, like, the first two-thirds of it minus some specifics.
Yeah. Well, little things like...
actually, before you do that, real quick, Nick, did you feel the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like the trailer gave away a bit too much. I understand why the trailer did what it did.
Sure.
It intrigued people.
It's Jordan Peele's first feature, and it's a horror movie, not a comedy. I mean, you needed to put a pretty big chunk of bait out there to get people to watch it.
However, all the pieces were there. Mm-hmm. I wasn't trying to solve it. I was sort of just enjoying the story.
Well, that's what I want to say, is that I don't feel like being able to spot the twists before they come is a bad thing. Right. What it means is they were playing fair with the audience. Everything is there so that, like, when they reveal that it's not just hypnosis.
Yeah.
They had played fair because they had shown that Bradley Wood, they mentioned him being a neurosurgeon. It's a throwaway line. But if you're paying attention, you're like, oh, that's this. And then when you see that they're like swapping brains, it's that good. Kind of stuff, it makes sense because, yeah, there's you're primed to be watching for the hypnosis. It's the magician's trick.
Right. It's
you're
classic suspense misdirection.
You're primed to watch for one thing, but they want to be fair so that when they reveal, it's like you can go back and say, oh, yeah, they showed it.
Right.
So,
well, when they made a big thing about the hypnotism early on,
yeah.
It was just like, okay, this is clearly going to be the deal. There might be a twist or turn to exactly how they're employing it or what their intent is. But like, you're like, you kind of think you know the whole thing and you don't quite know the whole thing.
Did you guys figure out that his girlfriend was in on it before they revealed it?
Yeah, I did.
Because that's another one.
I wondered about it, but I think I think it had like entered my mind at one point, and then I went ahead and let it slip away. So that when they got to the reveal point about it,
I did figure that one out because I felt the production was too big for her not to be involved.
That's what I thought too. Is like, it's like, okay, it's kind of weird that she knows all these people and that she's, you know, and
she was also like, she said, oh, my family's not racist. They're all super liberal or whatever. No. And then like they get out there and like, she was like, huh, like, I guess my dad is a little bit worse than I thought. And I guess my brother is too.
But that seemed realistic.
Her brother was so skeevy.
That seemed realistic. I can totally see someone doing that. But just the fact that, like, as Nick says, as it was going on, I'm like, she probably knows about this. And the beautiful thing is, even when it was clearly that she was involved, like when he finds the pictures in the closet, she was acting so believably. I'm like,
I know.
I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe there is. Maybe she's hypnotized.
Right.
Yeah, I did consider that.
It wasn't until the big flip where she holds up the keys and gives that evil smile that I was like, oh, okay. Yeah,
that was creepy.
Also, I didn't see the reveal about grandma and grandpa until it hit.
I didn't.
And that was a great one. There's all these little bits. Like the fact that his grandpa wanted to be in this runner's body flips back to him. Him being not making the Olympics because of Jesse Owens.
Yep.
And I think that's what's interesting is that the racism that's at play here is a different kind of racism. This is not a, like, we don't want black people in our world. This is a, we want to take the advantages that we think that, that African-Americans have.
It sort
have.
Of speaks more to, if you were looking for sort of what the allegory might be to, like, you know, corporations that sort of exploit them, that's like, well, we don't really want them at the dinner table, but we would like to get make millions off of their music or whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's about, as much as it's about sort of evil white people, it is deeper than that because it's also about sort of cultural assimilation.
Right.
And the whole thing of like it's supposed to be, and I have friends who've told me, said, like, he made a joke that was like, he's like, this is a documentary to me. But how uncomfortable African Americans can feel in like white suburbs.
Right.
That it's just like you feel like they feel like an alien there.
It has a very startling opening.
Yeah.
That fulfills the kind of traditional tropes of the first sort of victim in, yeah. In a movie.
Yep.
And interestingly though, like when you reflect on it, you're like, oh, I know what was going on there. Yeah. Like, and even I think, do we know that that was probably the brother?
I thought the brother, but it was in the dad's car.
That's true.
The helmet was in the dad's car.
He very much did the chokehold thing.
Yeah, I thought it was the brother. I assume it was the brother.
Yeah, it's the brother. But
it's a slow burn, and like you know, this I like my paranoia movies, and sure, so I was of course very much on board the kind of slow "what's going on here" kind of moments that were going on. But you know, like a lot, like a good horror movie, it kind of leads you in with some humor and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you
his buddy, is it Ron?
Yeah,
his buddy Ron, the TSI. He's a great character.
Well, even like the opening conversation, that's kind of real and kind of and funny too, between he and his girlfriend, where he's like, "Hey, did you tell your family that you're dating a black guy?" And she's like, no, my dad loves Obama and would have voted for him a third time if he could, and all she's this. Like,
which he's gonna tell you,
right? But he's like, okay, he's like, it just kind of seems like something you should have told him, maybe.
Yeah.
And she kind of plays it off, and then it's, you know, when you first meet him, they're like, you're like, oh, everything's cool. But there's this stuff that's lurking beneath the surface, and it's like the stuff that creeps out of conversations between friends and family, where you're like, did he just say that?
Yeah. Also, it turns out that she did tell him he was black.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, the reveals of all of it.
I want to just quick compliment both lead actors.
Oh yeah,
she was really good in as a sort of open minded, seemingly innocent.
Yeah.
And then good as a villain.
Yep.
And
sitting on her bed, shots of her basically. Her kills behind her.
I thought the soundtrack was really excellent, and that use of the Dirty Dancing "Time of My Life" song got a great laugh from the audience. Though there's a dark comedy, no pun intended.
Yep.
I bet that joke been made a million times.
Yep.
But also all the supporting actors involved. I mean, Bradley
Whitford,
Catherine Keener.
Well, you were the one who noted, Randy or Nick, that Bradley Whitford is a very watchable, likable guy.
Oh, he's great,
and he sometimes plays these villainous roles. Like his kind of completely amoral guy in what was the
Cabin in the Woods?
Cabin in the Woods, who's kind of gleefully taking bets on deaths and stuff like that.
Yep.
Just another day at the job.
He always has a likable quality,
regardless
of the evil the character that he's playing is. He's always likable.
Same thing is true of Stephen Root, who has a very memorable part.
Yes, he does. Catherine Keener, I haven't seen in a little while, except for on the the podcast that we were listening to.
I love Catherine Keener.
Yeah.
Dave, that was Catherine Keener.
Yes, I'm aware.
And she's great as sort of this, the hypnotist, the psychologist.
Which, also, by the way, their ability to take a, what do you call it, a cup of tea and make it like the scariest thing in the movie.
Yes.
You know, I want to just compliment Jordan Peele on making an effective, suspenseful horror movie.
That's the other thing. This is the first major film he's directed, and the shots and everything are great. The cinematography is great.
Yep. It looks beautiful. There's a lot of eerie sequences and good scares. By the way,
the lead in this is Daniel Kaluuya.
Okay.
He's born in London. He was in Sicario. I don't remember what his role was in that.
We perhaps know him best from Black Mirror.
But he was in Black Mirror. He's in the episode 15 Million Merits. He's the lead of that.
Yep.
Right, you may remember him cycling on like a little exercise bike.
Or putting a shard of glass to his throat.
Yep. Right, yeah.
Oh, he's in Black Panther.
Oh, is he?
Yep. Anyway, he's great here because he has to play sort of the nice, friendly guy, but also the strong, you know, the last girl of the horror movie, basically.
Right.
And also the sort of the emotion that he shows when they're using the hypnotism and sort of drawing on his deep trauma. Yeah. It's really good. Like he plays scared, but he also plays,
in charge. And then he goes to the violent.
Yeah.
I was not quite sure how this movie was going to play out.
Yeah, me neither.
And, like, there is a certain part of me, like, in a movie when somebody has been so hosed, has been so monumentally beat down, that really wants the cathartic payback ending.
Yep.
And brother, we got it.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
the It's a very satisfying payback.
The lead female, her name is Allison Williams.
Okay.
You remember that for that last name because she is the daughter of Brian Williams from NBC.
Oh, wow.
Oh, interesting. Is that the guy who, like, kind of got busted for his making up some stuff?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Anyway, she's played Marnie on Girls, so that's her biggest role to this point. But, she's great. She's another great character. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I hope this is the first in a long line of movies that Jordan Peele does. Yeah,
me too.
I wonder if he will be kind of doing... You know, I have this feeling he will do more.
Yeah.
And I wonder if he's going to be trying many genres, if he has a particular affinity for horror and might play around with it more.
Well, we know from Key and Peele that both of them, you know, they have a fondness like Game of Thrones and that kind of stuff. So I feel like these guys will do genre stuff.
I would love to see them do like a crime movie or a fantasy movie. If they like Game of Thrones, man, that'd be awesome.
You know, Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele were both in Fargo and had memorable small roles in that first season. Yeah, these guys are not only great comedians, but they're really versatile.
Yep.
And it was I was very nervous about Jordan Peele like writing and directing, right? Didn't he write this as well?
Like we really wanted it to come off, but it was just like.
But this is an ambitious first project.
Yep.
And I saw Keanu, and I thought it was okay.
Right, like a slightly too overblown sketch.
Yeah, and I worried this might be the same thing, but no, this is legitimately great.
Good question. How'd you guys feel about the intermix of humor in it?
I'm okay with. I need my humor in my horror movies.
Yeah,
I need that release valve.
You've liked kind of like The Thing or something like that, right?
Yeah, but The Thing has little bits of humor too.
Sure. I mean, like I don't think I've. I'm trying to think. Like
every good horror
The Exorcist, movie. I think, is one of those ones that has.
It has some comedy.
The Exorcist is pretty dark.
Man, I can't think of a single one.
It's got some moments of levity and things.
I don't know. Maybe I have trouble thinking about the Exorcist. In general, I do prefer a little levity.
Rosemary's Baby even actually does have something. Man, Exorcist, I'm not sure if there is. I usually like something to break the tension every once in a while, too.
Yeah, remember, I'm not a horror guy in general. I'm less of a horror guy than both of you guys.
And this one, what's interesting is that, you know, like, there's some pretty broad humor. His friend is kind of goofy.
Yeah.
But a really entertaining character. I really enjoyed his stuff.
When he's on the phone with her towards the end.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I did think at times threatened to become a little over the top.
Mm-hmm.
But because this was, in many ways, a dark parody or, like, you know, a darkly satirical sort of thing.
Yeah.
I enjoyed kind of going along with it.
Yeah.
And his character kind of got to shine in a really interesting way.
Yeah.
PSI.
Yes.
Yeah. There's so much. I can't wait to go back and rewatch this. I think there's elements.
I feel like it's very rewatchable.
You guys notice, of course, that the deer that hit them, like it looked like it got fired at them. Like, I don't think that was an accident.
Oh, you know?
No, I believe that was because that was related. His mom got hit in the hit and run. It was being it was set up to program him to have that fresh in his mind.
It's true.
Right.
And then he goes and sees the deer. Like, all of that, I believe all that was intentional. And I'll be curious to go back and see because I think there's a lot.
About that.
There's a lot of layers to this. So
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned it sort of playing fair with sort of the mystery. And I do think that, they layered the movie nicely. A lot of stuff that's small early on pays off.
Mm-hmm.
Just the broad craft of doing a suspenseful movie just really came off.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, this is a weird comparison, but it reminds me a little bit of what I liked about 10 Cloverfield Lane. Sort of suspense where you're trying to figure out the whole time, like what's actually going on, but there's real danger for the characters
And it's and then the other thing is that this is going to ignite a racial conversation.
Yeah.
We've already seen some whiny white people who are like, oh, stop being mean to us. And I'm like, hey, maybe stop oppressing for centuries.
There was a piece that I saw that was that my friends posted. There was two African-American guys talking about it. And
like a dialogue between them. I saw
it. It was fascinating. It was really interesting. There's stuff I hadn't considered. Yeah. But there's also a couple things.
Some critical stuff we should know.
Yeah. And there's a couple things in there where I was like, okay, I think you guys are either overthinking this or I'm not quite buying your argument. So
it's one of those where, and I think they did acknowledge this, where there were some criticisms that suggested sort of like that they needed the movie to be everything to them.
Yes.
But then they would say, okay, a movie can't be everything to everyone.
Right.
So they sort of backed it off a little bit, but. There's a few interesting criticisms. And I did notice when I saw it, and this is actually not a criticism of the movie, but like the audience I saw it with laughed at times that I thought were some kind of weird times.
Like, we're not necessarily meant to be funny.
Right, right. And like, almost seem to be thinking that this is, like, a crazy Key and Peele comedy.
Right.
And, like, I think the girl sitting next to me seemed to think, it was as if she had walked into Keanu. And, like, her primary thing seemed to be, this is humorous.
Yeah.
Whereas I felt like big chunks of it were very suspenseful and creepy.
Yeah.
So
some people react to horror in that way, though. Some people like to laugh at scary stuff. Like, yeah,
nervous.
That's how they diffuse their tension. Yeah.
Right. It's just that when I heard her talking about it afterwards,
she was like, "This was hilarious."
She was talking about what a hilarious movie it was. And so, I think in some ways, people's reactions are maybe telling of what they get out of it.
Yeah.
You know, like, do you find it, you know, disturbing? You know, what this big secret plan was.
Right.
You know, if it's just dispensed to you and you're not thinking of that second layer, that's a little disturbing to me, which makes the movie extra even more disturbing, yeah. Which means it's successful.
Yeah, it's great. People should go out and watch it. Although if you have already seen it, you are the only person to listen to this. If you haven't seen it yet, you disobeyed me.
Yes.
Why would you do that?
Why would you do that?
What's funny is, although we did sort of talk about what the reveal was, we didn't talk about the video quite the specific intent.
No, there's plenty of surprise left. You should still go see it. But don't disobey me again in the future.
That's right. Randy will be watching you.
That's
and
right.
He's got a China cup.
Exactly. All right. That's up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. And until that time,
Yo, Joe.
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.